In 1998, the Roads and Traffic Authority commissioned Marianne Hamilton and Sue Anderson to undertake an oral history of the vehicular ferries in New South Wales. This compilation tape is drawn from over 40 hours of interview material recorded for the study. The opinions expressed in the oral history tapes and on this compilation tape are those of the people interviewed and do not necessarily represent the views of the New South Wales Roads and Traffic Authority. We would like to thank all those who gave so generously of their time to share their memories and knowledge of the vehicular ferries. For many years, the vehicular ferries were a common way to cross the rivers of New South Wales. In fact, where you see a bridge today, there could well have been a punt or ferry at that crossing or nearby. They are an essential part of the road system in New South Wales and integral to the lives of individuals, communities and industry. Many of the ferries were originally established by enterprising farmers or local landholders. By the early years of the 20th century, control of them had passed to the New South Wales Public Works Department. In 1925, responsibility for many of the ferries had passed to the Department of Main Roads. Today, the RTA owns 14 vehicular ferries in New South Wales, and they operate on the Clarence, the Hawkesbury, the Parramatta and Murray rivers. During the last three or four decades, with the development of better roads and a comprehensive interstate highway system, many ferries and crossings have either been replaced by bridges or completely disbanded. Among those ferries no longer operating are the magnificent self-propelled steam ferries crossing between Newcastle and Stockton, and several ferries on the Hastings River. Most people seem to have memories of travelling on a vehicular ferry, either as part of their everyday life or as a delightful holiday adventure. Here is John Clifford, ferry maintenance supervisor, describing a typical vehicular ferry.
It's just like a barge type construction, just flat deck, flat size, flat bottom with tapered up each end. There's no front or back to them, you can turn them around wherever you like.
The RTA ferries are made of steel, the exception being the older timber ferry servicing the Wymar crossing on the Murray River. The structure of the steel and timber ferries differs considerably, as the steel ferry hulls are effectively a series of watertight tanks welded together, as John describes.
They're all watertight tanks, so all ferries have different amount of tanks in them, but each ferry's got its own self-contained compartment. So if it does get a leak in it, it can't sink. All bar this wooden one, there's no bulkheads. What we call bulkheads. The bulkheads go across thwart ships, and there's 4.5 bulkheads. And they're fully sealed, so you have one there. And well, the one timber one we've got, there's no bulkheads in it. So they're framed up and they're just all open. Yeah, just a hollow hull with framing in it, with deck and bottom plank and side planking. So if it fills up, that's why you've got to have more bilge pumps on them to, if anything goes wrong with them, they will go down. So there's a number of our ferries. We've got five ferries riveted hull. That would date them from about 1930 downwards. So there's one 1899, there's one 1911 and one 1919. So from about 19... probably the late 20s down to 1899.
As John indicates, the techniques of constructing riveted steel hulls come from a bygone era of shipbuilding, and gradually the skills required for this type of construction are being lost. This poses a great challenge for the maintenance and upkeep of the older steel ferries, as Martin Halley, formerly an engineer with the RTA Fleet Management Section, recounts.
Now, we had no one left in the workshop who could rivet. We only had one boilermaker who had never done heavy riveting, and certainly not on ships. It was hard enough to find somebody who could taper and bend this plate to suit. Anyway, they eventually solved all those problems, or found somebody who could do it, and then said, right, they found somebody to make the plate, and it fitted. And then they got the tar paper, which used to go into the joint in between. And then they said, right, now we're going to rivet it. So they got out all this ancient riveting gear. All this stuff, this portable forge and the tongs and the old tin can that catch the red hot rivet. But nobody knew what temperature it ought to be. And they had a string of three boys that would take the rivet from the forge, take it up to another bloke, he would take it down, because you've got to have a holder upper inside. The rivet goes in from the inside. It has to, because the riveter is on the outside, so the holder upper is on the inside. He jams the rivet in the hole, puts a, what they call an air leg against it, which is an air piston. He jams it against some part of the frame, puts the other end against the rivet head and turns on the air. Holds the rivet in. The boilermaker on the outside with the rivet gun, which is also pneumatic, da-da-da-da-dang, knocks it over. So it had to get down into the hull. Now, this big ferry, the Wiseman's Ferry, had 13 compartments, and it was all divided into 13 compartments as a guard against sinking. And one of these compartments had the bad plate. The boilermaker's mate is crawling through this hull with a red-hot rivet in his tongs to hand it to the holder-upper, who is on the inside, and all this had to be done before the rivet cooled. Now, it had to remain red-hot. And nobody really knew how to do it. So there we were, fiddling around. There was about a dozen rivets to go in, only a dozen. They put in a dozen and then cut a few out to see that... Because the thing with the rivet is, when you knock it over, you can't tell whether the head is square or skewed without actually cutting it out again. Now, in the old bridge building and shipbuilding construction, they used to specify 10% more rivets than they needed, with the knowledge that probably 10% of them wouldn't be properly driven. In our case, because of our inexperience, the rivets were most often too cold, and they were loose. You could tell when a rivet's loose by tapping on the head with a hammer. If it rings, it's tight. If it makes a dull sound, it's loose. So we had to cut more than 50% of them out again and redo them because we hadn't got it right. So we went on with this, and it was... all chalked up to experience and to apprentice training and so on, because it was an extremely expensive business.
The ferries move across the river on two cables, a drive cable, which moves the ferry, and a guide cable. The cables need to be constructed to withstand a lot of wear and tear.
It's a wire rope. It's 6x7, which is six strands of wire twisted, and each one of them six has got seven strands in it. Right hand lay in each twist, and up the centre of it is a fibre core, so when it stretches there's a slight give there. Galvanised gal wire rope, and whatever particular length what crossings they vary from 500 metres to 1,000 metres.
The maintenance of the ferry fleet is undertaken by a multi-skilled team, which is headed by John Clifford. Phil Hyde, the technical support manager of the RTA fleet, outlines the ferry maintenance program.
Well, the service day a month is engine and transmission service, inspection of all electrical and safety equipment, inspection of all the rigging, inspection of bits and pieces. Then there's a three-monthly inspection that John Clifford does, and the papers are sent to the locals plus the waterways authority. And then there's a three-yearly out-of-the-water overhaul and full inspection.
The three-yearly overhaul involves taking the ferry out of the water, giving it a complete mechanical overhaul, and stripping and repainting the hull. For this overhaul, the ferries require slipping or dry docking.
Well, the ones in Sydney are done on... they're either done at their own dry dock... slip by at Mortlake. They're towed down by tugboat, positioned on the dock and towed out with a winch. In other words, they go up a dry slip, in other words, a rail ramps out of the water. Very common practice in all forms of ship repair anyway. The dry dock at Ashby is you float the vessel in and then pump the dock out. Shut the doors and pump the dock out.
The Sydney Region ferries are overhauled at the Mortlake Slipway on the Parramatta River. The slipping of the ferries at Mortlake was by all accounts a huge event that required 2 weeks' notice to local residents, police traffic control, closure of the streets leading to the ferry approaches, and, prior to the mid-1970s, required the assistance of two winches housed on prime movers. The process of slipping the ferries took place in the middle of the night in June to ensure catching the full benefit of the spring tides. In the mid-1970s, Martin Halley devised an innovative permanent winching system at Mortlake, which makes the whole process a lot easier.
The Mortlake slipway became very important. For years they had used trucks with winches behind the cabs, prime movers, with huge winches behind the cabs. And they'd run these wires out, down the slipway, out into the Parramatta River, hooked onto the ferry sitting out there, and hauled it up using these trucks. The trucks had to be jacked and braced and wedged and blocked, and it took at least a day to set them up. It used to block the road to the Mortlake ferry for most of the day. We had to have police supervision and council to close it off, and had to be announced 2 weeks in advance and all this sort of stuff. And they said, well, why can't we get some permanent winches mounted on the ground inside the slipway, which would always be there? So we said, right, we need some big winches to be mounted, two of them, up the top of the slipway. Where are we going to get them? How much do they cost? Can we get some second-hand ship's winches? So I got sent down to a shipbreaker's, and they said, go and look for these winches. I understand these blokes got some winches down at the shipbreaker's. So I went down there. He was like the Dodgy Brothers, this bloke. He was amazing. Got just what you want. Come over here, you know. And you see these dirty, rusty green things. But they were off an XANL ship that he'd broken up. And they were what we wanted. And I said, we'll take the cover plates off and let me have a look at the gears. So he took the cover plates off and he said, look, still got oil in it. So we had a look at it and we tinkered and we figured around. And I had a budget. I took a deep breath, crossed my fingers and said, right, I'll buy it. So we bought it. And delivered to the slipway. And all the time I'm thinking, oh, God, I'm not right. Anyway, we had to put foundations down for them. Now, all of Sydney is on sandstone, which is horizontally bedded, and it's always got lenses of clay and joints and all that sort of stuff in between them. If you just bolt that winch to the slab of rock and then start pulling the 200 tons, it'll just crack the rock. So what are we going to do? So the dry off has got to work. And there were boring piles, and they were making huge holes and massive foundations going down 30 feet, all this sort of stuff. They got it worked out. Each winch will be held by four piles drilled 20 feet, 30 feet down into solid rock, filled up with reinforced concrete, reinforcing cages, and then a slab cast on top, the winch mounted to the slab, everything be hunky-dory. Okay. So I order up this earth borer, this big boring machine to bore the holes in the rock. He comes in and he's going grind, 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 grind. He's getting nowhere. Obviously too small. Send him away. So I called up a bigger one. He came down and he said, oh, I said, I think I can do it. Grind, 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 grind. Another 4 hours. Still no progress. Right, where's the biggest bloody rock borer in Sydney? Send him up. So we get him up. He gets up, of course, and he's got this monstrous tall mast, and it interferes with the power lines. And that was the reason why I got the small one in the first place, because these power lines and all these restrictions. Anyway, we finally got him in, and he bought it in an hour. We installed the winches, and we ran new wires on them. Everybody was very keen to use the winches on the big one from Wiseman's, because that was always a real problem to get up on the ways. So we started up, and it was smooth as glass. It was so beautiful. It was because they had a low speed and a high speed, and they set them on the lowest possible speed, and it just whined a bit, and she came up. It's lovely. And all the local residents loved it, because it used to be trucks with engines bellowing for hours, dragging this thing up. Everybody's shouting and yelling and roaring engines and smoke. It's just a whine.